the 340B program, in brackets, and the sustainability of comprehensive health services to vulnerable populations, in brackets, are two conceptual ideas that I'm going to try and marry for you. Anybody here for which this slide doesn't apply? Anybody? Okay, let's do it reverse. If you're here, raise your hand. Okay. Now, if you feel, hey, Allison, if you feel, I didn't say you could lower your hands. If you feel that this slide doesn't apply to you, then you could lower your hands. Look, we have people whose slide this doesn't apply to them. Okay, so no one here is experiencing a cut in funding or increased competition for patients, fear of divisions of, or hold to personnel being lost, or, this is my favorite one, let's do more for less pay. Well, this is very common for agencies that exist at the mercy or at the aggrandizement or at the benefit of government grants and support. Okay, so that would be, for the most part, anybody here from FQHCs? Okay, we have one. Ryan White funded agencies. Excellent, excellent. Ryan White funded agencies. So since they're on that side of the room, and we only have one over here, I'll be speaking to this side of the room. So let's talk as buddies in this entire environment. What is happening to us? Other than sequestration, okay, have you experienced cuts in funding? Okay, there are cuts in funding, okay? And if you're Ryan White, you probably have applied for capacity building grants and expansion grants, special projects of national significant grants, CDC grants, SAMHSA grants, NIDIC grants, PCORI grants. And what is consistent about those grants? They have a beginning, a middle, and an end. So you develop great capacity from those grants. You serve many people. The money, the infusion of money into your agency is tremendous, far better, far greater than you could ever do with a fee-for-service or a capitation model. And then what happens at the end of 3, 4, or 5 years? They're gone. Not because of ineptitude or incapacity to provide deliverables. That was the contract you signed. And the government's on to other things. But what is the government on to now? What's happening? Do the people here, do you get to see the notices of grant award? The timeline when your grants will cease to exist. All of ours end June 30th, 2015. So if you ask a project officer, July 1st, 2015, could you talk to us about that? Anybody here have an answer? Anybody here? Okay. So there are great vulnerabilities for the persons and the agencies providing care. Now, there have always been great vulnerabilities, and there's always been a great gradient in health outcomes and mortality inversely proportional to income. So what you have is that if you look at epidemiologic studies, if you were very poor, probably didn't live as long as people who are very rich. And today, we're kind of, for the very first time, changing that, where the quality of health care to the poor, through Ryan White programs in particular, has changed that dramatically. So we've built up great capacity to serve, great knowledge, great skill, and a great medical workforce that probably has not been known in the history of public health. Ryan White has redefined the standards. And I say that in deference to a Project A officer who's here in this room, who's helped our agency learn to look at quality outcomes. And it's been a great learning experience. And it is costly. It is costly in terms of dollars, in terms of human effort, and in terms of emotional impact. Because who defines our target populations now? It's not the low-hanging fruit. It's not necessarily the worried well. We're always looking at a moving and transient population, populations that know more about what it is like to live in a prison or a crack house, or a homeless shelter, not have running water, have insecure housing, domestic violence issues, and criminal records, not to mention mental illness, substance abuse, and a host of other comorbid medical conditions than we have ever seen before. No one here could tell me we've always known and been able to treat those populations. That's what we always did, because we did not do that. People like myself who came out of the University of Pennsylvania and had Ivy League educations did not go into the poorest neighborhoods. We went into the wealthiest and fancy neighborhoods and bought the wealthiest and fancy houses and cars, sent our children to private schools, and then by accidents of nature ended up in public health. And so I'm here speaking today to tell you that if you are in public health and you are facing the vulnerabilities of funding, you do have some chances, but not many, to look at stability in the economic platform in which you work. And one of those capacities built on a foundation of a government intervention is the Office of Pharmacy Affairs 340B program. Now, just so we could level the playing field, who has heard about this before? So we don't have all the hands of all the people who are Ryan White providers, which is not good. But the young lady, FQHC, excellent. Okay. So what's happened here? You have to be a covered entity. You have to be eligible to be participatory in this. So if you're not one of these federal grantees or hospital types, bear with me. I only have like 8 minutes left. Okay. So hemophilia. FQHCs, FQHC lookalikes, health centers, Ryan White programs, on the hospital types, DSH, disproportionate share hospitals, children's hospitals, freestanding cancer. I know there are 13, there's one missing, and it's leukemia centers. Yep. Okay. So, what happens in this? Where do you sit? Let's start looking at numbers, okay? Public health, we really look at people and patterns of behavior, and we also look at way money is spent in the country. $2.8 trillion on U.S. healthcare expenditures. Up the ante by $1 trillion, you got your U.S. military. How about the U.S. prescription drug expenditures? 10% of the entire U.S. healthcare expenditures. That amount of money, $277 billion, resides in maybe 10 of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the country, which probably in their aggregate have more money than the next 490 Standard & Poor industrial companies in America. Okay? And then very right down there at the bottom, $6.5 billion on drug discount savings. When we talk about 340B, and we talk about the vulnerabilities of your agencies to survive or not to survive, it is that $6.5 billion which our government, as a blessing to us, said is available to you if you do the following things. So, what do you need to do? It's established in 1992. It's been a very long-standing program. I registered in 2003 and let my program sort of like grow at the times, which means I was government grant and supports, and I really didn't need it, want it. It was like working with our pharmacy. It was like more of a problem than it was worth. But that was 1992. We didn't have protease inhibitors until 1995. And we didn't have many of the rules and regulations that first started to come in 1993. We didn't even know about them. Patient definition, 1996. Vendors, you didn't need to have a specified vendor. Now you do. The vendor is the wholesaler. Amerisource Bergenheim, okay, RNS, Capital Drug, they have to be registered too. By 2010, we have the Affordable Care Act, the National HIV-AIDS Strategy of the United States, and our first proposed regulations, significant regulations, within the OPA. So you have, let me read this out for you, you have many different components, but why are the manufacturers in it? Because if they want to sell their drug and get reimbursed by Medicaid, they are forced to be participatory in the 340B program. So we haven't talked dollars and cents yet, but when I get to it, you'll understand that we are talking millions, if not the billions, that we talked about. If you are a covered entity, you just don't call up and leave this auditorium today and say, I want to register. You cannot register now until January 1st or January 15th. 3 months go by, and they're going to look at your application. Are you really a covered entity? Are you really disproportionate? Are you really an FQHC? Are you really a Ryan White? And they'll call you up. Then they'll say, you're registered. You'll get that notification in the mail. They'll say, do you have your own pharmacy? Because we didn't see you registered that. And you'll say, well, I have a contract pharmacy. You then have the next quarterly period of 2 weeks to register the contract pharmacy. And so if you registered in January, you then get to register your pharmacy in April, and then by July 1st, you're up and running. So what are you up and running and doing? You're dispensing in the usual course of business outpatient drugs, not inpatient. No inpatient drugs and no vaccines. But for the most part, the formulary under 340B is extremely comprehensive. You do have an immense number of responsibilities as the covered entity. It's your contract in the OPA. It's your ability to get into the OPA website and initiate the whole process. It's your finding a contract pharmacy, and then it's your championing this program to engage your patients, enroll them into this, because this is all part of compliance. On the other hand, the pharmacy has many, many regulations, foremost of which is that, unlike the CVSs, the Walgreens, the Rite Aids, what's big up here in Boston? What's the big one up here? I'll think of it in a second. See, right. You have to segregate the drugs, either physically or virtually. Well, virtual requires immense software, so what you'll see is these are the retail drugs over here, and the one company over here, the FQHC for Brookline or something, well, where's your FQHC?
Kentucky.
In Kentucky.
Yeah.
Well, you in Boston may have a pharmacy here for serving a Kentucky agency. This is the Kentucky medicines, and these are the Philadelphia agency medicines, and the Daytona Beach, and the Sherman, Texas, and wherever in the country, they all must be segregated. Okay? Huge responsibility. Why? Because this is the keystone before you could make money of compliance. This is not for the faint of heart, but when you understand the economic rewards, you'll say, okay, we can regulate ourselves in the OPA framework. It's an immensely targeted program. You have to have every conceivable type of check and balance within this. No diversion whatsoever, no double dipping to Medicaid versus your Medicaid managed care program. So you could have a Medicaid managed care program, but you can't bill Medicaid. You can change medications in the middle of a month, but you have to have a reason for it, because why would you change? Because when you realize how much profit there is in the spread, you might be thinking, well, you know, we'll get 3 medicines on Tuesday, 14 on Wednesday. You have to be very careful in your dispensing. There must be no diversion. There must be inventory control. Okay, so for those in Ryan White, Atripla, if you send your patient out to a CVS and that patient has insurance, that cost of that 30-day supply is $1,700. The cost in a retail pharmacy is $1,500, so there's a $200 spread retail. So pharmacists are very happy, extremely happy, when you send your patient into their pharmacy for a retail distribution of Atripla. But when you write the prescription by your physician for a patient who's living with HIV in a covered entity, Orion White, and that pharmacist calls up his registered wholesaler, registered in the 340B, the cost of that Atripla is now $700. Are we up enough to do the arithmetic here? It's a $1,000 spread. That patient is getting Atripla, one prescription every single month. And $12,000 a year is going to you as the covered entity. Now put 100 patients on that. Okay? Now add anything else that the patient's getting. Any other antivirals, not antiretrovirals, okay? Any anti-anxiety, okay? Anything, antifungal drugs. Anything that's in the 340B formulary counts. Put them on Fusion. The difference is $1,700. Okay? So the average number of prescriptions we are writing for our covered patients is about 3 a month. Small agencies have about 100 people or 200 people on this. So now you multiply 100 people times 3 prescriptions a month times 12 months times 1,000. And you suddenly have a revenue source in a small agency of about $2 million. With thinking about that, I end my program, and if you have any questions, and it's after 12 o'clock, please ask Dr. Moore. And I thank you for your courtesy. If you don't clap now, I'm really going to be disappointed.